try to go back to sleep, and sure enough, we start hearing her name being called from the hallway. There's nobody there. And that was the first time that I'd ever heard an actual recognizable sound that was like human come from whatever's there.
Hello and welcome back to episode 9 of Hey, That's Weird, the paranormal storytelling podcast that puts you on the hot seat and brings your stories to life. I'm your host, Luke Frost, and this week we're headed back to Canada's most haunted town, Victoria, BC. Before that though, a big shout out to anyone who has listened to the series this far, and especially those who have taken the time to engage with us on social media. When I say us, I mean me. Thanks. If you want to help the show out, please review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. It helps immensely. Special thanks to Karen, Spen, Sunagaj, DSS, and 6odmod3, who all left super nice comments on the Spotify. This week, my storyteller is Kyle. I've been trying to get Kyle on the show since the very beginning. I'd heard his story on the podcast Armchair Anonymous with Dax Shepard, and I reached out to see if he'd retell it for Hey, That's Weird. He agreed, but being a busy husband, dad, and full-time worker, it was tough to pin him down. I eventually got to sit down with Kyle and hear his stories firsthand. And it was definitely worth the wait. Without further ado, Kyle, let's get weird.
My name is Kyle. I'm from Victoria, still live in Victoria. I'm excited to tell the story again and in more detail of the house that I grew up in Vic West. Haunted, creepy house in Vic West that is still there, and some people actually know exactly which house that it is. And it's always interesting when people listen to the story that I told a couple of years ago back on Armchair Anonymous with Dax Shepard. People have actually reached out and said, I know exactly what house that is in Vic West, without me ever saying the address or anything like that. So it's interesting that this house, to many people in Victoria, has quite a lore to it. So the house in question is on Powderly Avenue, which is a small side street in Vic West, kind of tucked just off of Dominion. And that neighborhood is one of the original neighborhoods in Vic West. And the house in particular, that property was part of the original farm that covered Powderly, Reno, Belton, Pine Streets. And so it dates back, for city records anyways, it dates back to 1878, I believe it was. But there are records from the house next door that actually dates back to 1871, but there's a gap. So they don't actually know exactly when this house was built. They just know kind of a ballpark. And what makes it even more interesting is the address on either side is a massive jump. So there's something with this property that they can't find official documentation on when it was ever built. They don't know why either house on either side of it or the house across the street from it have totally different numbers. Typically on your address, it jumps by 2. This one, it jumps by 10. The city doesn't even know why that happens. But I've talked to John Adams, who runs the ghost tours in Victoria, BC. He's a local historian. He and I actually spent about 4 or 5 hours before my episode on Armchair Anonymous to try to find more information on this house, because he has actually had people reach out to him before about this house and several others that are on Reno, Belton, and Pine Street because of the very creepy, unsettling kind of feelings and things that have happened. My mom bought the property in 1977. I've got two older sisters who were both born there. The house, when my mom bought it, was a two-bedroom bungalow. It's a single level on a huge double lot. It was only about, I think, a 900, maybe 1,000 square foot house. Then I came around in 84, end of 84. And by 88, my grandparents decided to renovate my mom's house and raise it and build a second level and turn the house into a four-bedroom house. Well, the original house became the top level. My sisters are about 6 and 7 years older than I am. And my oldest sister, she remembers, you know, some bangs and, you know, sounds and whatever from when she was growing up. But it didn't really start getting really bad until the renovations happened. The first thing that I remember, I was about 5, so this would have been probably late 89, early 1990. I was in the upstairs bathroom. That bathroom, it had a small window that it was about 20-ish feet off the ground. And between from where that window was to the house beside is about a 20-foot gap. There's nothing in between or anything. I was going to the washroom. Again, I'm 5 years old, and I see this hand come through the window, and I start just losing my mind, and I'm trying to get out of the door, and the door won't open. It's just seized. It's like the lock was like concrete. The handle wouldn't move, nothing. It was so bad, my grandfather actually busted the door handle off to get me out, and he's like, I don't even know. That was the first thing where I was like, what just happened? I'm 40 and I still remember exactly what that hand looked like. It definitely wasn't like a human hand. It was a very skeletal, opaque hand that was coming through this window. And again, it wasn't like somebody could be pulling a prank and, you know, putting a Halloween hand through it or whatever. There's no physical way, unless you're on a ladder or scaffolding, to get up to that window. The fingers and everything were significantly longer than any kind of human hand that I've ever seen. It wasn't like an animal hand or something like that, but it was just like very long, skeletal, but also like opaque looking. It was very weird. And again, that door, it had one of those regular like push button locks, and the whole lock, even when my grandfather took it off, it was almost like it was compressed in. It was very strange. Through the years, from that bathroom to the end of the hall, which is, so where the bathroom was, my bedroom would have been directly to the left, my sister's would have been directly to the right, and then there was a hallway. And you had a set of stairs that went downstairs. And at the end of the hallway, my mom's bedroom was on the left. The big master bedroom on the right would have been my oldest sister's bedroom. At the end of the hall, it was just a wall. There was wall, bedroom, bedroom. That was it. And a few times, again, when I was going to the washroom, you know, this was middle of the night. I was freaked out. So I would leave the door open a little bit and you would see a man standing at the end of the hallway in between my mom and sister's bedrooms. He was quite tall. He was a very, like, just solidly built person, but the clothes that he was wearing were not modern whatsoever. Definitely in work attire. I would say definitely he was working on a farm or doing some sort of trades. Again, quite tall. I'd say probably around like 6 foot. You could make out some features. Like you could see that, like, he wasn't a fat guy, but he was like big and burly and strong. He had a beard, he had a mustache, and that's kind of the best way to describe him. The original house, as I said, became the top floor. So if you look at this house in Vic West, the top floor looks like an old heritage house because it got the huge bay window. And my grandparents, they actually extended the bay window all the way from the ground floor all the way up to match the house. In the bay window, the one and only time my mom ever acknowledged that there was something there, he was standing in her window one night when I was coming home from soccer practice. I looked at her because I saw it, and I was like,
"You see it, don't you?"
And she was white. Like, all the blood had just drained out of her body. She actually went to sleep at her sister's that night. she was like, "There's no way I'm staying in this house." I only saw what I believe is the woman once. We never saw the kids. We heard them all the time. I've even asked my sister if she's seen the kids, and she said no. The wife was, like, quite small, quite short, again, wearing, like, an old-timey kind of dress. Over the years, we started to see, my oldest sister and I started to see him more and more. He would stand at the top of the stairs, and the stairs going from the first floor to the second floor were steep. It was quite a long, steep stairwell, and he would always be standing just at the top of that stairs. We would hear often walking, talking upstairs. Doors would open, doors would close. Bookcases, dressers would get knocked over. When my sisters moved out, I would have been 10, 11, and I started sleeping downstairs on the couch. I was like, there's no way I'm going back upstairs. This place is insane. You would have what sounded like a family. You could make out little kids that were upstairs. You could definitely make out a female voice and like an older male's voice, but you couldn't understand what they were actually saying. Again, through the years, you knew that they were there. They were mostly harmless, except for that first experience. Until we started to get a bit older and more things started to happen, and it started to actually come downstairs, which had never happened before. It definitely started feeling more evil and like something bad was going to happen. We started getting this really heavy feeling, this like dread, this brutal energy. When I was 18, I was dating my now wife. She was 16 and she was staying over one night, and I had done something playing baseball. I'd hurt my back or had done something. So one of the only times I'd ever taken a sleeping pill in my entire life, I took one and I was out. And we were the only two people in the house at the time. From that hallway, that exact spot where I was saying that you would see a man standing at the very end of the hallway, right in between the two bedrooms, my wife, Anna, hears being said from the hallway. Nobody else in the house. And she wakes me up from, I'm out. I'm knocked out. She's like,
"Somebody say my name. Somebody say my name."
And I go and look around the house. Nothing. And I'm like,
"There's nobody here. No one's saying your name."
She's like,
No. "Somebody say my name."
All right. So try to go back to sleep, and sure enough, we start hearing her name being called from the hallway.
Anna.
There's nobody there.
Anna.
Anna.
And that was the first time that I'd ever heard an actual recognizable sound that was like human come from whatever's there. Talking to John from the ghost tours, we looked into a whole bunch of different possibilities. We looked into if it's First Nations, Indigenous. Again, it is in Vic West, which does have a rich history of Indigenous people, but it's too far inland from the water. So the Coast Salish people were around Banfield Park, the Songhees, the Victoria waterfront, but they weren't so far inland because all the berries and all the fish that they needed were right along the shorelines in those areas. So we started digging into the city archives, and that's when we found the weird gap of like the kind of timeline of when it was built. And there isn't any kind of building permit for the property from back then, but all the other houses that are on the street that were built in the same time frame all have the building permits that we can see. UVic has a really great archive that you can actually access all of these for free. We then started trying to dig into, okay, if it's not Indigenous, what is it? You know, was there a murder in the house? Was there, you know, whatever? Nothing that we can find of any kind of solid concrete information on it. It does look like in the 1940s that somebody that lived in the house did kill somebody in downtown Victoria, but it wasn't in the house. It wasn't none of that. From that point to basically my mom buying the house, it was the same owner. But what makes this story even stranger, the house directly beside us is the original farmhouse for the area. We were the third original house on the street. Because you look at my house, it looks like a 1990s stucco house, even though it still has the bay window and everything. The house directly beside looks like an old white farmhouse. That house burnt down twice mysteriously, once in 1991 and again in 1993, for no reason. So the fire department, police, everything determined that there's no cause of fire that they can determine. It wasn't electrical. There was no people that did it. Nobody was in the house at the time, but my bedroom faced the house. And both times it started in the exact same spot. So if you're looking at the house between the two houses on the, it'd be the left-hand side of the house, the first window in, it started up in the roof right above it. And there would be a giant hole in the roof both times it happened. Both times it happened, there was something that came out of that hole that I don't know what it is. There was something floating. There was something, there was an energy that was there and you could see it. It didn't have any physical appearance. It was just like there was a something there. That street has about three streetlights for the entire 400 meter street, maybe three streetlights the entire length of it. And I would run down the street to get home because as soon as you turn onto that street, you get this really heavy sense. It's a very bizarre feeling. I don't know what is on that road, but it's not good. A woman named Jade, who used to work for the Zone radio station in Victoria, she had reached out to me because we had mutual friends and she had heard about my house. But she didn't know exactly what house that it was. She didn't know, you know, the street or anything like that. And as I started talking about this house, she's like,
I know exactly which house that is.
She's like,
I've walked past that house at night and I've had this sense of danger and I've had to leave immediately.
So she said she's actually told people about this house before and they've gone and looked at night and they've seen somebody standing in the window still. My mom sold the house in 2005, and when we were packing up the house, I remember saying,
it's okay, you don't have to be here. You can leave now. You don't have to be here.
Nothing left, because the people who bought the house, they sold it within 6 months. Their toilet was smashed downstairs. Their bathtub was broken. Shower head got broken. They had like scratches in the walls. They had a cat that mysteriously died. And they were like, I'm out, I'm done. You know, I didn't have any, other than being locked in the bathroom, I didn't have any violence, but I sensed that something would have happened. If you talk to John Adams from Victoria Ghost Tours and you ask him about, you know, houses on Powderly, Reno, Belton, or Pine Street, there's many in that area that are haunted, that there's some bad stuff. And he even acknowledged one house on Reno, which would have been four houses away from mine. He acknowledged that that house has some demonic thing in it, and it has had a few different attempts at staging and exorcism and stuff like that. There's just something about Vic West and how old that it is that there's a lot of very creepy, very haunted buildings and houses in that area.
At the beginning of this series, I was more skeptical than I'd ever been. However, 9 episodes in and hearing everyone's stories, I'm now a believer more than ever. So thank you all for bringing my wonder and curiosity back. I decided to ask Kyle if him and his family had considered saging or blessing the house while they were there, to encourage whatever was there to move on. Here's what he had to say.
It's funny, I was raised Irish Protestant because like my grandparents are, or were, Irish Protestant, but I'm not religious myself, and my family refused to believe. It was only my oldest sister and I that actually acknowledged and believed that there was something in the house. And so, would we have done it? Yeah, but nobody else in the family believed in it.
I felt like it was a pretty silly question at this point after hearing his stories, but I still had to ask Kyle the same question I like to ask everyone. Is he still a believer to this day?
Definitely. Again, I'm not a religious person, but I do feel that, you know, when we do die, that we don't just, you know, disappear. We're somewhere and we're around. And I guess some people are more sensitive to being able to pick up on that energy than others are. Or maybe some people just, you know, they hear something, they see something, they're like, ah, whatever, it's the wind. But yeah, there's definitely something else out there.
Finally, I wanted to know if Kyle had passed on his sensitivity of the paranormal to his children. Here's what he said.
My daughter, she's almost 11. She'll be 11 in November. My grandparents passed away almost exactly 6 months apart in 2018. And she said one day, we're putting her to bed. She wasn't even 5 yet. And she said, your grandpa says hi. I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, I've also talked to your grandma before. Well, yeah, like when they were alive. And she's like, no. I talked to grandma not that long ago.
And as usual, if you're a regular listener, you know that I like to give my guests on Hey That's Weird a chance to promote or plug something that they're passionate about. Here's what Kyle wanted to share.
So one thing that I am really passionate about actually is trying to bring more awareness to the Victoria Pediatric Intensive Care. Most pediatric fundraisers for the province are all for BC Children's. BC Children's, don't get me wrong, they're very important. They're a great cause. But most people don't realize that Victoria also has a pediatric ICU center. We're the only other one for the entire province. They get basically zero funding versus BC Children's, who gets all of it. So I like to bring awareness to, one, it exists. Two, they need your help. They need your support. And three, they keep 98% of all kids from the island here on the island so they can at least still be close to home if they're really sick. You can look at Victoria Children's Foundation. If you look up Victoria Pediatrics for donations, yeah, Victoria Children's Foundation is definitely a really important one.
And that's a wrap on episode 9. Massive, massive thanks to Kyle for finally giving in to me bugging him for his story. And a huge thanks to you, the listener, who makes this entire thing worth making. I'll see you in a couple of weeks. And until then, stay weird.